Good morning. We are in Luke chapter 15. If you want to meet me there as we continue in our series, our rhythm series, as we look at different practices of the Christian faith, as we seek to arrange our very lives, not just trying to fit God into busy lives, but actually saying, how do we actually shape our days around the life and teaching of this Christ, including many of the spiritual practices that he gave us to do. I want to thank, over the last 3 weeks, Pastor Mike, Pastor Mark, and Pastor Jared, who shared. Mike spoke on intercessory prayer, and that meant a great deal to me. Mike is a faithful man of intercessory prayer. Pastor Mark spoke on praying the scriptures. He has spent countless hours praying and clinging to the scriptures. They are not ideas for him. They are his very way of living. And Pastor Jared last week spoke on confronting strongholds. And Jared, if you know him, is an incredibly courageous man who has in his own life faced his own strongholds and it has bravely entered into that space with other people. I'm very grateful to be able to share this series with them and to learn from them these last weeks. So while Mike is very good at intercessory prayer and Pastor Mark very good at praying the scriptures, Pastor Jared very good at using the scriptures to confront strongholds, I'm preaching this morning because I am very good at resentment. Resentment is not something that happens when things go right. It's what operates in the messy reality of what happens when things go wrong. I believe resentment is a universal experience that can touch people groups, political parties, but it doesn't just stay there. It goes to our spouses, our children, our best friends, our neighbors. Resentment is something that is deeply involved in our human messy experiment. I read this a number of years ago. I love this story. A man writes that last night, my wife's boss from her brand new job invited us over for dinner. On the drive over, my wife reiterated many times to me just how important it was for me to make a good impression. I scoffed, like so many of us husbands would, and arrogantly informed my silly wife that I always make good impressions. My wife's boss is a single lady in her 50s, so it was just the three of us. We chit-chatted over drinks and salads and seemed to be really hitting it off. She laughed at my well-timed, perfectly appropriate jokes, and my wife seemed pleased. You know that's not the end of the story. So what happens is basically that the boss brings out the steak that's for the table, and apparently the steak that's served to this man, he's very uncomfortable with. He says it is well less done than a rare steak would be, and he thought he couldn't eat it. And tells him the story just how stressed he is getting about what is he going to do with this steak that he's refusing to eat, but he doesn't want to make a scene. So he says, just then, our hostess excused herself to the kitchen to take care of some dessert preparations. As I looked across the fancy dining room table at the open window of this third-story apartment, a cartoon light bulb appeared over my head. We men, we're just so smart. I knew I had to be decisive, realizing she could return at any moment. So I committed. I grabbed the steak with my hand, gently shook off the juice, and executed a perfect throw right through the center of the open window. Here was my big mistake. The window was not open. It was the cleanest window you have ever seen in your life. That is, until my mostly raw slab of steak slammed up against it and slowly slid down, leaving a trail of bloody juice in its wake. My wife, whose steak was a nice medium rare and was unaware of my predicament, turned, jaw dropped, and stared at me like I was an alien from another planet. This look then slowly morphed into a more of a there is no place on this planet that you can hide from me expression of demonic anger. My wife's boss heard the thud of the stake on window impact and came quickly. She took in the scene. Anyone else sweaty? The stake in the window and the bloody trail and my empty plate and gave me an inquisitive look. I just didn't know what to say. It felt like a minute of silence, but finally the best I could manage was stammering through, makes an excuse of it slipped. He said, I knew what I had to do. I dusted off my steak. I sheepishly returned to my seat and proceeded to eat every bite of that disgusting, cold, chewy, bloody, raw steak. I remained pretty quiet the rest of the evening. My wife's only two words to me since the incident are, I'm fine. Resentment is a universal experience. As we talk about this resentment, which really is a feeling in our heart, this feeling of resentment, which is often characterized by the words, I'm fine, by the way. As we talk about that, we ask, what does this have to do with spiritual practices? What does this have to do with like the spiritual rhythm series? This series, as we've talked about, has everything to do with our friendship with God. But what does our resentments that we have towards one another have to do with our relationship with God? Jesus teaches throughout the Gospels over and over that hard hearts simply cannot receive God well. He also teaches that there are very few things that harden our hearts more than the resentments we have for each other. Jesus taught that the way that we go about being wronged and responding is one of the chief hallmarks of the New Testament ethic. The clunky and difficult practice of forgiveness is necessary for us to enjoy the spiritual life. We must be practicing forgiveness from the heart all of the time. So simply, Jesus taught that the spiritual practice of forgiving others from the heart has a massive impact on the way we live our days and the friendship that we have with God. We are returning to Luke 15, and a few weeks ago when we began this series, we looked at this very passage. It's a passage of a lost son coming home, and the front part of the passage is about a son who went and lived riotously, it says, and rebelliously, and took his father's inheritance and squandered it, and then eventually came home in this beautiful scene of father meeting son and putting the ring on his finger and enjoying this relationship restored. And this is a big part of the story. It's not actually the primary point of the story, the return of the prodigal. The primary point of the story, Jesus was talking to the Pharisees in Luke 15 about what happens in our hearts when we see other people be forgiven and how to deal with our own resentments. The story then shifts from the prodigal son who was lost to the proud son, the resentful son who was also lost. And this morning we're going to shift our attention to that son, the older son in the story. We're reading in Luke 15, we'll start in verse 25 and go through 31. This is after the prodigal had come home. In verse 24, the father says, "This, my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found," and they began to celebrate. And verse 25 says, "Now his older son was in the field, and he came and drew near to the house. He heard the music and the dancing. He called to one of the servants and asked, 'What do these things mean?' And his son said to him, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound.' But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, 'Look, these many years I have served you, and I've never disobeyed your commands, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But this son of yours who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. And he said to him, son. He said to him, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive. He is lost and he is found. What is resentment that we see in this older son? I want to share four things I think about resentment. Then we'll go through, I believe, this incredible example of how the Father deals with the resentments that we all face. First off, when it comes to resentment, I want to say this. What resentment is the most, or one of the most, disguised spiritual issues for us to identify and admit. When we went through and did this series last year and went through two different groups going through, and we talked about resentments, something that initially happens when you think about resentments, everyone says the same thing. This is something I've faced so often with so many people, including myself. We say, I'm not bitter. I'm not bitter. I'm a little frustrated. I'm a little annoyed. I mean, I remember what happened, but I'm not bitter. We don't want to easily identify as anything that could resemble resentment. But yet resentment, as we went through this series, we realized was something that we all experienced quite a bit towards our children, towards our spouses, towards our friends, people we loved, towards people groups that we didn't understand or know, towards people groups we did, towards God. Resentment is something that's not easy to identify in ourselves, but I truly believe it is just about a universal human experience, and I think it has a tremendous impact on our relationship with God. Here's why I think it's difficult to identify this particular issue in our hearts. One is resentment gives sustainable strength. Anger, a hot anger, an anger that explodes, there's a wake of destruction. And usually after an angry episode of something that has blown up, you can look back and say, you know what, that might have been an overreaction. That might have been a little much. Hot anger is a little easy to identify. It has a short-term burn and causes obvious damage. Cold anger, the resentment that sits in our heart, actually gives a lot of strength day by day, and it has a long-term ability to keep you upright or stiff-necked. The ability of resentment gives a lot of strength to us. In that way, we often befriend our resentments because they get us through the day. We can have a really exhausting day of work, but on the ride home, if we can think of how much we're working harder than the other person, if we can rehearse in our head how bad our boss is, it gives us some sense of strength. It's hard to recognize because it empowers us. Secondly, it is tied to my self-protection instinct. I love how the father will eventually respond to the son here. He's like, hey, whoa, all I have is yours. But because he recognizes one of the chief reasons, if not the chief reason, that the older brother is upset in this story is that the older brother is looking and says, is that younger brother coming home to get more inheritance? Because he's already here and we've already got music and dancing and the fatted calf and I don't even have a goat. So is that kid coming back to take what is mine? It's a self, it's a self-protection instinct that we have. We think that resentment is even a natural and even times a healthy instinct is what we feel. That no, somehow I got to protect myself because I've been mistreated. Prolific PhD author, speaker, Stephen Stoney, secular guy, says this: one of the worst psychological pieces of advice on the internet is that which describes resentment as a healthy emotion. Contrary evidence in psychology and medicine notwithstanding, some authors argue that resentment is healthy because it tells you that something is wrong. But he writes this: so does disease, emotional disorder, and addiction. There are healthy ways to know that it's something wrong and unhealthy ways. Healthy boundaries are needed when we are chronically mistreated. Healthy boundaries are a beautiful and appropriate way to respond to threat. But resentment is a defense mechanism that does not protect you. It is, as many authors have noted, drinking poison and hoping the other person will die. I think it's also easy to not see in our lives because resentment also makes a great deal of sense. There's a word in verse 29 that I love. It's almost like you have this son outside the house of music and dancing pacing around. And he's just like, how can people be so dumb to receive this younger son? And he's out there angry, and the father approaches him and he uses this word, look, look. Like he's grabbing his dad by the lapel and just like smacking him around and be like, wake up. Like, can't you see what is happening here? Just look. Like, I know you're wise, but have eyes to see what is actually happening. Resentment, frustration, not allowing the son home is what makes most sense. It makes sense to be in opposition to the son because the son has put himself in opposition to you. Look, father. Because the reality is it makes sense to be resentful. Because people really do disappoint us, misunderstand us, and mistreat us. Relationships and resentments go hand in hand because we're really close to each other. And we really disappoint each other a lot. And so resentment in the gut is an instinct that we have when someone has let us down. We're let down all the time. This is what when we have trust issues. You know why we have trust issues? Because our trust has been violated a lot. Because we really do disappoint and miss one another. Resentment is a natural response. And honestly, when we think, should I have resentment? We start thinking, well, maybe I shouldn't be resentful. But then it quickly goes to like, but look what they did, right? I feel for this older brother in this story. He's saying, look, it makes sense to have this feeling because over and over, this younger son continued to cause pain and loss. And I saw the tears you had, Father. I've seen what it's done to you. I've seen the loss of our estate by giving him all of these things. I've seen the drain that it's had relationally on you and me. I've seen all of this. Resentment is the appropriate response to somebody who's hurt us this much. It makes a great deal of sense. And lastly, resentment has the best memory. Resentment always will be able to remember the details of how we've been wronged. The older son goes through that in great detail and in violent language. He says in verse 30, when this son of yours who devoured your property with prostitutes, he goes and is able to again detail the list of wrongs. There's something that I'm quite good at, and that's keeping score. I don't know if you've ever been in discussion with your spouse or someone who's really close to you, and in your head you realize, like, I've got 10 points to their zero. And you realize when you're talking to them, they don't even remember all of the things I did to get to my 10 points. There's like an adrenaline rush when you're like, oh man, I can let them see. And so then you go through all the 10 points of the reason why that you have gotten all that you do, and somehow it never pans out. It never really convinces the person. This last year, Mike and I had our biggest fight of the year. Some people say, like, oh man, you know how this new arrangement you guys are going to do here at the church? You guys always get along? The answer is no, not always. We do mostly, but sometimes he's wrong. So I'm just kidding. So we talked a while ago to you all about we're doing a prayer walk back in the property. It's something I'm super passionate about, super excited. So is Mike. Let me put it that way. But we also realize that there's a parking problem, and so we have to do some parking work as well. Well, I was one pushing forward this prayer walk and meeting with deacons about it and talking with various people and really passionate about getting it. Mike, on the other hand, felt like, okay, well, maybe we should wait until we do the parking lot so that we're not having to do the same thing twice and redo the prayer walk. Both of those, we could both make arguments today why they make sense. But in this process, I started keeping score because I felt like he was saying, yes, let's go forward with it. And so I'd take a step forward and we go work with it. And then eventually it came to this head in his office some one afternoon. And there's one of those that people would walk by the office and knock and like, no, maybe I won't go in there. They're having a discussion. And we went and I went and talked with Mike and I had all these points about Mike. This is why I think, this is why I think, this is why I think. And remember when you said this and you said this and you said this. And Mike had a really wise comment. He said, Ben, I wish I could say I was concerned about this before and I said this or whatever. He said, but I just know you're going to be able to say, well, on July 8th at 4 o'clock at p.m., I gave you this impression, and so that's why you took this step, and that's why da-da-da-da. And it just really stopped me because I could. And I was. Resentment has a phenomenal memory. It can remember every way it feels like it is in the right and the other is in the wrong. Resentment is truly hard to identify in ourselves. Secondly, resentment is a moral emotion. It's a moral emotion. Henry Nouwen calls it the curse of the good. Look at verses 29 and 30, what he says. He says, look, these many years, not these days, not this last week, these many years I have served you. I have never disobeyed your command. That's him speaking it. And he says, and you've never even given me a goat that I might celebrate. And then the other, but when this son of yours, that's what I did, but when this son of yours, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you kill the fattened calf for him. It is a moral emotion. This is a violation. The older son deserved more and the younger son deserved less is the way it's feeling. Every time we feel resentful, this is it 100% of the time. It's because it feels righteous. It feels righteous to feel resentful because it is a feeling of morality of this is what should happen. Resentment is often caused by the accurate understanding in life that we are working harder, caring more, and doing a better job than someone else. We really think that resentment in that way is our moral birthright because we've put more time and effort in than the other. Third, resentment is the easiest way to slowly feel separate in a relationship. If you think about the people that you have resentments towards, of people that you feel resentment towards, you immediately in your mind and in your heart try to separate yourself from them. Friendship, gratitude, these are things that join us together, make us feel connected to the things we're grateful for, to the friends that we have, to the brotherhood that we and sisterhood we have in community. These are things that connect us. Love is a union sport, but resentment is a sport of separation. Notice what he says in the text. Let's go back to 25. Older son is in the field. He heard the music and dancing. 26, the servant comes. He called one of the servants, says, what do these things mean? The servant says, your brother has come. Now look how he deals with the brother. He says this in verse 30. When this son of yours came, not my brother, not when my brother came home. He's not really my brother here. He's your son. Then the father again comes back and says, your brother has come home. But what happened in the heart of the resentful, the older brother? He separated himself out. I don't want to be associated in that. Because while love seeks common ground, resentment seeks upper ground. It seeks to have the upper hand. It will try to decide, and this happens right during our commutes, during our shower, during places that where our mind drifts, we try to think of how wrong they were, push them down in our minds and hearts, and how right we were. We don't want to be associated with them. We want to be separate from them. The easiest way for you to feel separate from your spouse, for you to feel separate from your kids, for you to feel separate from your parents or your friends or your church, allow resentment to grow. And you will find more and more we look for ways where we can be separated as opposed to seen as together. And then lastly, resentment is the arsonist of joy, right? You look at verse 25 here. This is a good thing going on. There is a celebration happening. There is music and there is dancing. There is the best food. They typically would not have meat at a meal because of the expense. But this isn't just meat. This is the prized meat. This is a whole village scene. For the fatted calf to be killed, this is an event that has now erupted out of nowhere. People thinking they got to get their to-do list done for tonight and thinking through, we got to get ready for the work thing tomorrow. That is completely scratched. It is an impromptu celebration, so much so that the older brother didn't even know the younger son had come home. It was just like, what? What is the party? What's going on? The whole village is here, right? We got auntie so-and-so and neighbor that there, and everyone comes, and I can smell the fatted calf. We never have fatted calf. And then it's a Tuesday. What's the party? Then he finds out. And he's not like, well, I'll still get a good meal. At least I can get a T-bone, right? He's coming in, and he's angry. Doesn't even want to go inside his own house. Why? Because there's nothing that steals joy faster than resentment. And while resentment makes us feel strong, it's not a vulnerable emotion. Vulnerable emotions like sadness, insecurity. Resentment is strong. It makes me feel tough, but it doesn't make me happy. Resentment is the arsonist of joy. So how do we identify resentment? How do we know if we're saying it's not an easy thing to be able to identify in our heart, especially because we have an image of like when we hear a resentful person, we think of like that book, Great Expectations, and that old lady that's all shriveled up at the end, hating everyone, or like in literature, the Count of Monte Cristo, whose whole life is consumed by revenge. Like that's what we think of when we think of those bitter, resentful people. But in our everyday life, I think it has a lot more power than we might give it credit for. So how do I identify? Here just a couple of questions for us. How do I identify my resentment? First, whose success bothers me? When something good happens, they get praised by someone in the community, or they do really well, or their people group, or their political party, or something is seen to be right, what bothers me? Secondly, who have I taken a snapshot of them and overlay it across their whole life? As in, I know what they're like because I remember when they did this. And now every instance when they come up, I see them as the person who did that thing. I take their worst moment or their worst quality and I overlay it to explain all of the rest of their motivations. Of I know what they're really thinking because do you remember when so-and-so did this? Or they're always doing that. And here's the third one. Who am I quick to say I have forgiven them? In various groups and in meeting with people, when I hear, oh, I've forgiven them quickly, I almost always lean in. Because forgiveness is a lot less like, oh, I gave them a quick forgiveness, or oh, I've reconciled and decided to forgive. Because when we get hurt, it's really hard. We get let down by a parent or a spouse or a friend. It's really painful. The first thing we want to do is not give them any power. And so we know the Christian response is, oh, I forgive them. But the people who you are quickest to say, oh, I've forgiven them, I honestly think probably have more power than you might imagine. Forgiveness is a lot more messy than we think. Forgiveness is often a process, not a fixed point. It is not, I forgave them. It is, I forgive you today. By grace, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and remember something else that ticked me off, and I'm going to try to seek to forgive then too. Forgiveness is mostly a daily relational battle, not a specific transaction that gets labeled forgiven. I think because we know that God has the ability to completely forgive without having different emotional attachments and resentments, we think that humans can do that too. It has not been my experience. And the long arm of grace in becoming a forgiving person is much more a brick by brick, day by frustrated day process than just a quick transaction. Those who have truly forgiven, they know how hard it is, how much time it takes. Lastly, how to identify resentment, and I honestly think this is the most important one. Ask somebody who loves you. I was talking about this sermon this week, and was saying this point, and someone close to me had the bravery to say, hey, who do you think that I resent? I had four answers for them in a matter of 10 seconds. And they said, who do you resent? And it took me longer, because it's easier to see other people's resentments. After a while, when you hear somebody complain enough about a certain person or people group, you're like, that person has something here. But it's hard to see in ourselves. Our hardness is hard to see. Why? Because when we don't see ourselves as resentful, we just see how wrong that person has been. If there's nothing else that comes from today, to be able to turn to somebody you love and say, hey, can you gently tell me who I might resent? And not just so you can fix the relationship with them, which is so important. We're doing communion next week. Those relationships need work even this week before we take communion based on Matthew 5. But even beyond that, hard hearts, and we all know what it's like to have a hard heart. God doesn't get in hard hearts. Yes, he can break us. Yes, he can move. But the way that our hearts receive him, the soil of our hearts, is so important. There are very few things that impact the softness and hardness of our heart, like the holding of resentments. Lastly, how does the Father help the resentful person become a forgiving person? How does the Father help the resentful person change to a forgiving person? When it comes to resentments, most of us would say we don't like that part of ourselves. We're embarrassed by it. We wish we weren't resentful. We even know that a lot of people we're resentful towards aren't all bad. But we hate when this coldness we feel towards one another, the separateness. But the Father teaches us how to deal with our resentments. Just wanting to stop being resentful is good, but it is not effective. How do I stop feeling resentful and truly forgive from my heart? Notice the text. The father goes out to the older son. The father leaves the party, leaves the home to go get the older son. In the same way that the father pursued the prodigal, he also pursues the resentful. He pursued both of his lost sons, the lost son who left and the lost son who stayed. It is not just us overcoming or trying to get rid of resentment. It is needing God's help to come to us. Secondly, the father listens to the frustration. In verses 29 and 30, when this son is out there walking circles and just thinking about this antagonism and frustration, the father comes out and doesn't just say like, what's wrong with you? Like, your brother's here. Get over your stuff, man. He comes out and he listens. Why? Because the older son has a big block. And he really has been mistreated because of what this younger son has done. He listens to the frustration. I think when we're dealing with our frustrations and being mistreated, this is why I think just saying, oh, I forgive him, we're good, is actually a dangerous and honestly obtuse way of dealing with hurt. We first have to listen and ask the question, why did that hurt so much? How long have I felt this way? What else am I feeling towards this person? Why am I so cold or protective or want to separate myself? Where's my pain here? To listen to the part of us that feels rejected. The father pursues the resentful, doesn't just rebuke, he listens. Son, why is this so hard for you? Why does this hurt? What are you afraid of? And we know he listens because of the way he responds in verse 31. He said to him, son, you are always with me. Just take that first word. Not like, dude, get a hold of yourself. He says, whoa. I know you feel like you don't even get to be the goat, son. And here's the fatted calf, son. You're all messed up. But here's what I just want to say to you before anything else. Son, he says, son, all I have is yours. Your inheritance is not under threat here. And I know you're all worked up because now you're afraid we're going to split this thing up again and the younger son's going to go out with the prostitutes again. That's what you're worried about. I know that. Let me just assure you, you have not lost anything with me. He assures him that he is loved too. He gives him the connection. And he says, you are always with me. There's nothing that we've lost here. And lastly, while he assures the resentful they are loved too, lastly, he shows him that in this family, in this home, we can operate in a different way. He says in verse 32, it is fitting. It is correct. In this home, what's happening with the younger son and the older son, the father is saying, this is not me just fudging the numbers. It's not me just being ignorant and just pretending things are okay. He's saying it's actually correct. What's happening with my receiving of the prodigal and my receiving of the proud, this moment here is actually the right way. Why? Because it's how this home operates. It is fitting in verse 31 to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother is dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. And what he's saying is, son, this is what it means to operate in this home. Jesus teaches throughout the New Testament really strong things about resentment and forgiveness. And he's speaking it to say, this is what the kingdom of God, the home of what the operation of where Jesus is king looks like. This is what we do. We are people who forgive. We are people who listen to each other, who hear the hurt, who work it through, who don't just tacitly throw words like it's all okay and I'm fine. We listen. We hear. Because this is the deal with resentment. It eventually creates a culture. Resentment has resentment babies. Like in a home or in a workplace or in a church. Like we're in a home that's always talking about how unfair the boss is or how incompetent the teachers are or how unfair the refs were. It breeds that. And you'll hear kids start talking in frustrations in a political environment where we build energy in our silos by declaring how dumb and worthless the other side is.
when we're whispering to our kids of how obtuse or unaware their grandparents are, when we're upset just with people who don't use their blinkers, or people who wear yoga pants, or people who insist on overpaying at coffee, and we're all just complaining, what happens? Resentment makes resentment babies. And you can see just in the home or the church or the workplace, it just is filled with this. And a sense of like everyone's a little frustrated at everyone else, and everyone else thinks they're the ones as the better than the other. Always needing to know who is to blame and how they can pay for their sins. This is where the Father draws a line. And he says, that's not what we're doing here. And the reason is not because the younger son got moral. And it's not because the older son got some sense of warm and fuzzies towards his brother. It's because the Father says, I have enough love here to go around. I have enough love in this place that we can set up an entirely new way of being. And very simply, this is what we learn in the whole of this story, starting verse 15:11 to the end here, is that this is what their home is like. Number one, we don't have to earn our own way here. Number two, there is room for mistakes here. Number three, there's enough to go around. Number four, love covers a multitude of sins here. And number five, in this place, we have room for music and dancing, because this place is home. In the lobby, as we've done for these, there is a practice for you. This one means a lot to me, and it's based on the teaching of Jesus of how to deal with resentments from Matthew 5. But first of all, it's noticing and identifying specific people that you feel resentful towards, asking someone close to you who those are, and secondly, praying for those people. And not praying for those people like, Lord, I hope they see their sin and repent and feel terrible about it, right? That some people can pray those prayers. When you resent someone, you can't. That's dangerous territory. But to pray for their blessings, God bless their day. I pray you'll bless that person's day. And what happens is you realize, I don't mean that prayer whatsoever. But then it leads us to another question. Why is this so hard for me? Father, why do I feel so threatened? What do I need from you? And allowing that prayer to then lead us to recognition like, God, I don't feel safe. I'm so tired of my spouse spending our money. I'm so tired of our kids needing me. I'm so tired of my parents having this or that. And we realize, God, I'm scared. I'm afraid. Will you come out to me too and recognize the own need of your heart? Because if resentful people are really just scared people, right? And so then understanding God's love and forgiveness, and then the next part of the practice is to pray for that person again. And a miracle happens when you do this. The second time, you almost mean it. You almost want good for their life. You're probably not there yet completely, but then you realize as the Father looks after you, comes to you, you know what? You realize there's enough to go around. You realize that even in the midst of my tightest, hardest places, that maybe there's some room for music and dancing too. Lord, we come before you. Oh, how creative you are to use even our resentments to take us towards your love. And Lord, I know I'm in a room of good people. And good people who work hard, who do lots of things, the curse of being a good person is that we realize a lot of other people don't work as hard, and it annoys the heck out of us. Then we're mad at ourselves because we know we should forgive them, and then we're off into some swirl of guilt and frustration. And all of a sudden, our hearts aren't soft. I know I'll do this by the end of the day again. So my prayer is not just radical freedom from every resentment, My prayer is in the middle of the resentment that we all have on this day towards people you love, that you'd meet us there. You help us recognize that we're scared too. We're scared of losing ground, scared of losing stuff, scared of being seen as weak or a pushover. In the midst of our fear, show us love and lead us into that place of your kingdom, a place where there's enough to go around and there's a party because the Father's pursuit of us is good enough to even enter into the frustrating things of our resentment. In Jesus' name, amen.